top of the show questions to both test you and kind of get the show rolling. And I think we've learned a lot from that, and we'll probably continue to do so. But this week, I'd like to audit the OPSEC of an actual security professional. Is that okay with you?
That's fine. I just feel like we're getting closer and closer to my password every week being revealed on this show.
Well, I think I've got somebody here that can actually help you with that.
Oh, thank you.
So, Sam, who is the most bizarre person you've ever met?
Most bizarre person I've ever met. I met Ben Folds once, actually. He was pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah, he's a little weird. Where'd you meet him?
He was playing a show in Athens, and I happened to be down in there in that area and met him after the show. He was doing a signing, and maybe I was the more bizarre one because I, instead of having him sign like my ticket stub or a CD or something like that, I walked up to the man, lifted my knee, and said, "Sign my pants, please."
Sign my pants.
He's got a pants.
Well, unfortunately, being a stupid college kid, I then decided, oh, these are the coolest pants I've ever owned, and I'm going to wear them and wash them and wear them and wash them and wear them, wash them, wear them, and it faded.
Yeah, I think that's probably bound to happen. So for those that are listening at home, this week we're joined on the show by my friend Sam Fox, who is a information security analyst at an undisclosed Fortune 500 company. Sam's been a friend of mine since middle school. I was lucky enough to serve as a groom's person in his wedding and a halfling rogue in his recent Dungeons & Dragons campaign. So Sam, welcome to the program.
Thank you, thank you.
And as our listeners can probably hear, because my editing skills are not that tight, you are just a few days shy as a new father. Is that right?
Yep. We have she's 2 months old. What is today's date? The 18th. So mm-hmm. She's 2 months old, or 19th. So she's 2 months old here in a few days.
Well, our congratulations to both you,
Jacob,
and Leah.
I thought that was just you whining in the background.
You know I don't cry until the second half of the show.
Okay, fine.
I'm glad there's a timeline.
What's dad life been like?
It's interesting. So I've gone back to work already. So I thank the stars for my lovely wife every day and the fact that she's able to stay home with with the kiddo. But for the most part, it's, you know, waking up at random points in the middle of the night, feeding a sad small human, and then making this sad small human fart a lot, actually. They don't tell you about that, but you spend a lot of time making a baby fart.
It's really nice that your job gave you time off. Paternal leave, is that like fairly common these days?
So we did about, I think, 2 weeks of paternal leave up until this past January. Starting in January 1, they picked up with 4 weeks of paternity leave, which is new for our company.
Oh, wow.
So that was pretty awesome.
That's good timing.
Yeah. Yeah. Got under the radar for that one real quick.
Just a couple of weeks ago, Mike and I were talking about how a lot of our friends are, you know, they're growing up and they're getting houses and they're having children. And we're just kind of talking about the changes that brings to not only their lives, but like our perception of our friends. Cause, you know, growing up with you, I know almost all of your most embarrassing stories. And
oh,
it's hard to imagine, and I'm not going to air them here, but it's hard to imagine the Sam Fox that I knew growing up as a father sometimes, and yet there you are.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah, I don't have a rebuttal for that one. That's just accurate.
Well, that's great. We're excited to have you here. In the past couple episodes of the show, I've kind of slowly been mentioning this ongoing task of mine, which is just kind of clearing up my digital footprint. It started with like my tweets. I just had a lot of tweets that are really embarrassing and old and just needed to go. So I started there. And even more recently, I've been thinking more about my passwords and how I still have a lot of accounts using passwords that are very, very old. And I know that that's very bad. So I've been trying to like wrangle in my 1Password account and clear up all of the little watchtower things that it tells you, like all the passwords that have been leaked out through various hackings and things and end up in data dumps and are all over the internet and God knows whose hands. So I wanted to have you on this week to kind of talk about personal security because you're the only security expert that I know, and you often scare the shit out of me with the things that you're able to find.
I'm honored. I'd say it's a skill, but it's been learned.
Yeah. How did you learn this?
I, like most great things, you kind of stumbled into it ass backwards. So I went to school for what I describe as like networking technician. So my degree is on information and telecommunications. So I was prepared to go and work for some run of the mill mom and pop shop, putting together their routers and stuff like that. But I happened to get picked up for an audit role where being a kid coming out of college, I'm like, I don't know anything. Why do they want me to check if people know what they're doing? So in there, I got introduced to a lot of security topics and a lot of security controls. And around those, I had sort of took a step back and said, I like this. I enjoy this day to day of, oh, why does this impact someone? What does this mean? How can I, you know, use this information to hurt a company or hurt a person or go about it and protect someone or protect a company? And then happen to find a way into the information security or cybersecurity realm at our company. And yeah, so that's where I'm at now. I've been there for a couple of years now. Well, I've been with the same company for a while, but I just got with I'm with the security group for two and a half years, something like that.
So you work in mostly, would you call it like, it's not necessarily enterprise security, right? Like what is your exact division? What would you refer to it as?
So we kind of call it corporate security a little bit. With a focus on operational technologies, because we cover more than just your standard business local area network. So through that, we get to take a look at things that are impacting processes and plant structures and stuff like that.
Huh.
So my specific role is more tied around monitoring and analyzing traffic data in and out of the company. I watch for specific activity that might indicate a compromise or specific targeted activity that might indicate someone is trying to get in.
So this is more than just somebody using Facebook at work.
Yeah, we do have that problem, but that's a different issue.
Well, that's crazy. And that sounds like, is it stressful? Because it sounds like that's a pretty big responsibility in today's age, especially for a company as big as yours.
Yeah, that's not even half of it, to be entirely honest. I'm strapped up with a work phone 24/7. Luckily, our team just got a little bit bigger in the last couple of months. So a lot of the pressure is off of me specifically. I used to be the only person doing this for our team.
Oh, wow.
So it's a little bit better, but yeah, it's a pretty stressful role.
So what does personal security mean to you? Because I don't even know if that's the right term, but I'm trying to think of, like, you know, my passwords, my digital footprint, the things that people can find out about me online that I wish that they wouldn't. What is that to you?
So for me, and you've actually kind of hit it on the head a couple of times already. So you mentioned OPSEC at the top of the show, and you've mentioned your digital footprint. So between those two things, that's where you can very quickly realize that, oh, hey, we are leaving breadcrumb trails of data about ourselves. Might be a little bit of data here and there, but we're leaving it as we go along the internet. And something that we forget, or a lot of people forget, is the internet is forever. I think it's called the Streisand effect. When you try and get rid of something from the internet, it just makes it all the more popular.
Yeah, from when she tried to scrub her mansion's presence off the internet when it was exposed in some tabloid or something. Yeah.
I think Beyonce went through a very similar experience because there was a halftime show photo where her thighs were almost folded in half.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And she wanted it off the internet. So it became way more popular and became a meme.
Yeah, that's pretty much every... What's the guy that keeps showing up on Twitter just saying the most awful things? Like, totally out of context and nobody's asking. The guy who, like, talked about, like, pooping on the floor in his college dorm or something like that. And he's like, and by the way, as an ad on tweet, he's like, and by the way, like, the thing about me pooping on the floor never happened or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And people are like,
it wasn't Jacob Wall. It was, yeah, I know who you're talking about, though.
That's the name that came to my mind, too. Whenever somebody says something, like, the guy who's on Twitter who says, or replies to stuff and nobody asks, it's usually that guy. Mike, how do you feel your personal security is? That's not a threat. I'm just genuinely curious.
I feel threatened. I want you to know that. I have to say it's pretty bad just out of knowledge of how anybody who thinks that they're secure, like, is just just terrible. Like, I have so many people, I have so many clients every day, so many tickets opening, just with people just coming in with they're just coming to the desk with their passwords just out and on, written on a piece of paper, and they think they're the best. They think they're awesome. They're like, oh no, I'm crack proof. I had a guy yesterday pulled it out on a piece of paper. It was just like, he's like, oh, I walk around with it with me in my pocket. You know, it's like a huge string of random characters. And then he's just holding it out in the open table while these dozens of people are just walking by us at any time. It's like, okay, well,
but what you miss is when he walked away from the table, he crumpled it up into a ball and threw it into his mouth and swallowed it.
Yeah. And ate it. he ate it.
So you think it's like, it's not bad. Do you have a way of managing your passwords? I mean, you're not writing yours down on a piece of paper, I take it.
Me? No. I use like the everything I say right now, I know is bad security. So there's no point in me even
saying
it.
That's why Sam
right
is
now.
Here.
I use like the keychain built in my phone, you know,
okay.
Like that, and that generates like a random difficult password or whatever, and it just saves it all on my phone. But I know that that's just one passcode away from if I lose my phone, if somebody gets my incredibly easy to guess passcode. Then that's it. Then they have every password that I've ever written or down ever.
Keychain isn't locked by your iCloud password?
No, you can access your keychain on your device with just your device passcode. So if like I lose my device and they happen to have my passcode, or they just hold it up to my face mm-hmm. while they're holding me with my arms behind my back, I have attention awareness on. Can't get me. If I close my eyes and they just stab me and I open my eyes.
Oh, gosh.
No, but yeah, it's all right there. Same as 1Password, you know, like it's all just one password away from being every password that you have, right?
Yeah.
No.
Are we on the right track, Sam? Because the way that I do it, it's not much different. Unfortunately, though, my passwords aren't even randomly generated, or at least the old ones. The new ones are, but the old ones are not, and they're split between like Keychain and Google's memory and 1Password. Like they're kind of all over the place right now.
Well, so I guess you're not too far off. And I'm going to preface this with, you know, this is my opinion as a security professional. This doesn't reflect anything from my employers. I'm not being paid to say any of this. This is just from my experience. But so the best route as of right now is to go the extremely complicated route, right? So don't reuse passwords. Don't do summer 2018, and then when it becomes winter, go, oh, I should change my password. Winter 2018. That's sequential, and we see it all the time. So the easiest way to manage large, kind of questionable, non-memorable strings is to use a password manager. Or you know, you can go the route of writing it down, but the issue with that is people tend to forget that they've written it down.
Or where they put it, yeah.
Yeah. Or they put it in a little book that's sitting beside their computer, and, you know, Cousin Tom comes in and goes snooping through your home, looks at your computer and goes, oh, hey, there's Mike's password for his banking account. I deserve an early Christmas present.
So, that prankster Cousin Tom.
Hey, you know, watch out for Tom. He's a bad soul.
He's a bad soul.
But the easiest in today's sort of million account style, industry is a password manager. Mm. I heard you mention 1Password. That's the one I use personally, and that's what my family uses. Some other good ones are like LastPass. I know a bunch of people use Dashlane as a good one.
Yep.
And now Mike, to your point, you know, you mentioned that it's, you know, just 1Password away from getting access to it. And that's not a incorrect statement. That is a concern, right? But that's why you need to have a password that is long, memorable, and something that you only use for that. Because the moment you use it anywhere else, you immediately drop the sort of viability of it, the entropy that comes with cracking that password, because it becomes in another spot where someone else can get it, right? Mm-hmm. Now, an alternative is if you don't want your passwords to be on a internet accessible vault, you can use local key passes, or excuse me, local key drives or key shares or vaults or whatever you want to call them. The really popular one was KeyPass for a long time. they had a really good encryption algorithm on the back end. So the databases took a very long time to break into. So that's the one I use for work passwords. Because I don't need those on the internet.
So a text document on my grandparents' phone isn't the best way to store their passwords.
Do not recommend.
Okay, cool. And you know, 1Password is pretty nice. I think it's pretty user-friendly. It takes time to get all of your passwords in there, but I found that it's, once you have it installed, it's pretty good at saying, hey, do you want to save this password when you go to log into something? So you just kind of gradually accumulate those things. And then over time, it gives you these recommendations. They have a whole section called Watchtower where they have categories. They have compromised logins. Those are ones that have been like leaked out in big data dumps. They have vulnerable passwords, which are probably more or less the same thing. Reuse passwords, which is where you use the same thing on 30 different accounts. You have weak passwords, which are just bad and don't have any like variability, and it's usually just one word or something like that. And then they tell you every single login that you have that has the ability to enable two-factor authentication, which is another really cool thing that I've been trying to get better at using, because, you know, you never know. If someone like ends up cracking one of your passwords, they can get in. But if you have two-factor, there's like a whole extra layer of security there that you can kind of use as a buffer to maybe get your account back while the person is trying to get in.
100%. Using two-factor is probably the safest way to protect you when it comes to password use, because passwords are, to be frank, passwords are insecure. They were designed around a time that didn't have the internet in mind, or at least not supercomputers that you can buy off of a shelf for $300, right? So that's where two-factor authentication comes in. And two-factor authentication really breaks down into having two of three factors: something you are, something you know, or something you have. So your biometrics, like on your phone, your fingerprint scan, your iris scan, your face scan, those are something you are. So that's one factor of authentication. Something you know, that's a password, passphrase, passcode, PIN, something like that. And then something you have, that's so like a token is like that. Smart cards, that's a sort of an encrypted chip code that is leveraged by the military the most, is where I see it the most. But, you know, you can't log in if you don't have that smart card plugged into your computer. So two factors, having two of those pieces of information ready to go, and then that's how a system authenticates you. So tokens are great. I will say, with a caveat, try and shy away from text-based two-factor authentication, because that's an easy one to kind of, we call it man-in-the-middling, so you can intercept the token.
You mean like SMS, text messages?
Yes, SMS.
Okay. So this is when like they text you a 6-digit code and you have to type that into whatever website you're trying to log into, right? So why is that bad?
I will say it's better than nothing, because it's a quick way to do some low-level protection. But I will say those are the more vulnerable to man-in-the-middle attacks and social engineering. So by man-in-the-middle, we've all heard about SIM swapping. It's becoming very popular right now. And that's where someone will go off, buy a phone, say, oh, I know whose number I want this to be. I'll call AT&T and say, hey, I got a new phone. This is my new SIM. Can you, you know, swap it over for me? So then they take over that phone. More often than not, you as the original holder of that number have no, AT&T doesn't reach out to you. There's no identification. There's no notification. There's no, hey, just so you know, you got a new phone now. Thanks.
That's insane to me that it can be done so easily.
The whole system is so backwards and so broken.
Yeah. Ugh.
This recently happened to this internet guy named Chris Messina. He's been around the internet for a long time. He does a lot of startup stuff, but he's most probably widely known as the inventor of the hashtag on Twitter. But because he's been around these social medias for so long, he has a lot of accounts that are, you know, like one name. So his username pretty much everywhere is Chris, which is really great. And one of the accounts that he has is on Instagram. So he's Chris on Instagram. And as you can imagine, a lot of people want that account. And he has this whole long Twitter thread where, you know, it's just screenshots of people asking if they can either have or buy his username. But some people just bypass that step and go for the hacking. And I believe his Instagram has been taken from him twice, and he has the two-factor authentication with his with text messages, and people just, they somehow spoofed his SIM and they got in there. He talked about it recently on a podcast called Gadget Lab on an episode called The Treacherous Allure of OG Usernames. So I'll put that in the show notes if anybody wants to listen to it.
There was a good Reply All on that too.
Yeah, I was going to say, Reply All did a really good episode on that as well.
He might have been profiled for that one. I don't know if they used his bits, but I think he was interviewed for that one too.
Let me pull up the episode now and we'll link to it in the show notes. But yeah, that was a great episode because it was all about this one girl getting hacked on Snapchat. She had the OG username of Lizard, just Lizard. Her name was like Elizabeth or something like that. And so she got Lizard on Snapchat. And so people were like, Alex ended up the host, Alex Goldman. He went like underground with the people like that steal usernames, like was jumping into Discord servers and everything, and actually got the person on the line that, you know, stole the girl's username and ransomed it. And like, ultimately he didn't threaten her, but somebody did threaten her as a result. And, yeah, it's a good listen. It's one of the better pieces this year.
Yeah. That whole situation is crazy just because the amount of money people pay for those OG usernames as well. On top of that, I think they're, you know, people are willing to drop thousands of dollars just to have the cool name on the internet. Right.
Yes.
Right. I had a friend who had the username Skiz, SKIZ. Just Skiz. And he was trading in OG usernames in like 2000 and like 2006 or something like that. He was doing OG usernames.
It's a wild business. I mean, like, theoretically, when a place starts up, you could run a script that has a list of common names, grab all these accounts, and then just sit on them until the demand becomes high enough.
I just don't know what kind of security you would need to prevent SIM swaps. Like what, like, I mean, maybe just anything else would be helpful, but like, there's gotta be a better safeguard against it.
So I can actually help you with that.
Yes. Let's hear this.
So that's where if a most two-factor authentication offering accounts will offer you leverage of a third party authenticator app. Mm-hmm. The really great ones actually offer you a hard token that they'll ship you in the mail, and it just has a regenerating code. I think a lot of banks do that now, and it's great. I love it. But more often than not, a lot of them will have it's just a QR code that you can scan on your phone, and it essentially sets up a seed, and then you have an iterative algorithm that runs every couple, I think it's every 30 seconds, giving you a new set of six numbers. It's unique every time. Well, it should be unique every time if it's a good token algorithm.
It's quote unquote random.
Right. Everything in the world's an algorithm at this point. So randomness is an algorithm. So with that in mind, you would then, as you log in, you go, okay, it wants my token, go to my phone, open the app and get it there. So this isn't connected. It shouldn't be connected to the internet. So you can't log into it from another phone with that same app. You have to have that app on you. Now, downside, if you don't have it, you can't get in. There's some recovery password or tokens that you can carry. Like I have for my email address, I have 10 recovery tokens, I think, that I keep on my person in an undisclosed location.
Tattooed to his ass.
Thigh, actually. So there are means to sort of help in case of account recovery or account loss. But you don't want that to be too easy, right? Because that's how... I think a lot of like iCloud hacking happens is fake password recovery attempts.
Email phishing, like, hey, you need to change your password.
Well, and then speaking of phishing, like even with SMS based two-factor, I could just as easily go, you know, try and log into someone's account. It says, hey, we sent a text message to this number. Put it in here. Then I can text that number myself and say, hey, I used to have your number. I'm trying to get back into an old account. Can you, you should get a message from such and such service. Can you give me that six digits? People fall for that all the time.
Yeah, totally.
It's such a simple, simple attack.
Oh man. Yeah, that's nasty.
Damn. Well, especially because if you just got a new phone number recently, like, I mean, I've had my phone number since I was little. So like, it wouldn't make sense if someone was like, oh, I used to have your number. I'm like, no, you didn't. It's not possible.
Huh.
Right. But if you think about it, the amount of effort it would take you as the attacker to do this, you can run through hundreds and hundreds of accounts
right.
in a matter of time. And the likelihood that you're going to get at least one is fairly high.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Okay, so SMS-based two-factor is better than nothing, but having an authenticator app is,
yes.
is definitely like the better route.
Absolutely. How
does the hard token work? Like, because I just wonder, like, because my job uses it, so I have a hard token for logging in, and how does it generate the out, like, how does the computer that I'm logging into know that my card, which is isolated from everything, how does that work?
So that I can only speak to the ones that I've worked with,
mm-hmm.
but generally speaking, a lot of them function based off of a seed premise. So essentially when you get your identity created, you have a set of seed values, right? And then that seed is generated and added to an algorithm that functions on the phone or hard token, excuse me. So that hard token then runs this algorithm, and that seed is a function within the algorithm, right? So your phone can calculate it, and then the system that you're authenticating with can calculate it. So it follows an interval of known algorithmic paths to spit out known token codes. And then if you, so sometimes your phone and the authenticator can get out of sync, and you'll need to, that's why sometimes you'll get into situations where you have to enter an authentication code two times in a row, or two different authentication codes two times in a row,
mm-hmm.
because it's trying to validate it knows who you are. And because of that, your seed is going to be unique to you. The two different times or two different iterations of that algorithm should be very unique, but only unique to you.
So theoretically, somebody could try to brute force into it, and they might get one of the things right, but they're gonna double test you.
Yeah, because there's always that opportunity for chance, right? I can set up a system that runs 6-digit characters over and over and over and over, and point at any account that I know has a physical two-factor. But ideally, you have it set up, whoever the administrator is, has it set up so that it locks out after X amount of failed attempts, or, you know, they're monitoring for high traffic login attempts, or, you know, hell, some places just lock the authenticator and say, hey, this authenticator is no good anymore.
Mm. Okay. So we've got two options here. There's like the hard token and the software version of that, which is an app usually mm-hmm. on your phone, maybe on your Mac or your PC. For just normal folks who are trying to get into this thing, maybe they've just set up 1Password, what would you want them to use as one of these authenticators? What are the best options?
So my go-to, more often than not, will be an app called Authy, A-U-T-H-Y. It's a really good general use third-party authenticator. You can load most tokens into it without an issue. Google Authenticator is also a pretty good one, as long as you're willing to be in the sphere of Google control. I know mm-hmm. some people are sensitive to that.
They know everything about you anyway.
Yeah.
May as well reap the value.
Some password managers actually have built-in authenticators. I think LastPass has one, and maybe Dashlane. I don't think 1Password does, though.
It does.
But it could be wrong.
It does.
Oh,
it does?
I've not actually messed with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's cool. I don't know if you can do it from the phone, but at least from my Mac, if you edit any particular like login entry that you have, you can add a new section and just change it from a text field to a one-time password. That'll bring up a QR reader, which will actually, it's a translucent thing. It's a translucent box that you just pull over top of the QR code that you have on whatever website you're logging into. And it automatically authenticates.
Oh, very cool.
It's super
I'll have
nice.
To play with that.
And then it starts generating your numbers in 1Password.
Super rad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to play with that.
I wish I would have found that last week when I started setting up two-factor and all these devices through my multiple two-factor apps, but it's okay. A Duo is another good one. I'm sorry, I don't know if you mentioned that one, but Duo is another good one that I like to use.
Yeah, I've used Duo a couple times in the past for some other services that we've leveraged.
I have a question. What do you say to someone who feels that they have nothing to hide, or to someone who like feels like, oh, what do they care? Like, I don't care. You can have my passcode. I don't care. Like, what do you say to someone in that situation or with that mindset besides mentally slapping them?
So, I mean, I get it. A lot of people have that mentality of, oh, I'm not a bad guy. I haven't done anything wrong. I have nothing to hide, you know, but the other aspect of it is privacy. So you wouldn't want to own a lawn and then let someone else make a bunch of money off of your lawn by gardening in it, would you? Well, it's kind of the same thing with your privacy. So companies out there, like any ad firms or any, like Facebook, for example, they're harvesting your data and then selling it. And you don't get any say, you don't get any kickback, nothing. And that just goes right in line with, okay, so you have nothing to hide, so we'll take everything from you and make a buck on it too. Plus, I'm paranoid, so privacy is good.
Yeah.
How do you know if your login data is like out there? You know, how are you supposed to know? Unless the website who has been hacked or something knows about it and emails you, how are you supposed to know?
So that touches on a couple of really great things. Right now, there's an argument amongst, I think this it's up at the Supreme Court, I believe, or Congress or something, of holding businesses accountable for breaches.
Hmm.
Because there's no, at least there used to be, no law around a company or a business having to disclose breach, a notification of breach. I think that's changed in the last couple of years. But I know that the law is still fairly vague. So companies kind of skirt around it. They have a certain timer once they quote unquote label it a breach or discover it as a breach. But that whole thing is crazy. So the way I look at that is you can't really trust the company to look out for you as their best interest. For them, their best interest is their own interest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, third-party services, my go-to is called Have I Been Pwned. It's a service that is free, and it's put together by an awesome Australian security researcher named Troy Hunt. Highly recommend looking up some of his work. He's really good at writing security in such a way that it's understandable for the masses. And there are few and far between people that have that capability. But his website is a great tool for people to just drop in your email address and say, you know, have I been pwned on this email address? And it will go through, he has access to, I think, 7 billion plus records when it comes to known data breaches. And with that, he scrubs through that and goes, okay, yeah, your email address that you've provided was included in these 16 breaches. This is what they got. We recommend this course of action. And then on top of that, after you do that initial search, you can then set up for email notifications. Hmm. So he adds your password or your email to he adds your email to a notification list to say, hey, if this one shows up in any new breaches after this point, send a notification. So I highly recommend that service. It's, you know, the fastest way that I've found to reliably be made aware of breaches.
I had already navigated there. As soon as you started talking about breaches, I was like, oh, I should go to Have I Been Pwned? And I went over there. And I think, Jacob, I think you and I should find out if we've been pwned right now. We don't have to say our email addresses, but the short answer is yes. Most people have been pwned, but okay. I just type my personal email address in, and I have been pwned by only one with this email address, according to this website.
So it gives you, it kind of breaks it down. It says you, at least for me, it says I've been pwned on 8 breach sites and found in 1 paste.
Oh.
And it gives you a list.
Yeah, it tells you exactly which ones you got.
And the first one on the list is a game called Town of Salem, which Sam had me sign up for.
Oh my gosh, it's all coming to the surface right now. This was all just one big scheme.
I got you in my trap.
Oh my god. That's so awesome.
Yeah.
I got pwned by Ticketfly, which I'm navigating to right now to change my password.
Yep, me too, in May 2018. All
right,
so
email me.
Let's see, who are the biggest offenders? I've got Tumblr, Ticketfly, ShareThis, Plex, Patreon, No idea what this is. Oh, these are just like, these are just lists that aren't necessarily attached to one place, it looks like.
So one that you're almost guaranteed to have is called Collection One, I think is what he still has it called.
Uh-huh.
That is a breach that actually was identified this year. And that, I think, is his largest breach on record with, I think it was 700
million. 773
million. Yeah.
Wow.
And that was just a public-facing database that some security researcher happened upon in January. It's insane that that was out there. Because I think that has all kinds of things, including passwords, or it's just email and password, I think.
Where is this coming from, though? That's so many records.
So that one, the current theory is, well, no one has come up to say that, yes, that's our data. So no one is taking claim on it yet. So the current theory is it might have been a collection trove of all kinds of different breaches across the years, where either hackers or collectives of people have been just kind of dumping them into a singular database and then leveraging them one way or the other. Because I think he made a post about this last month, I believe, about how, you know, I think this was the only one of the few breaches that of all of the subscribers to Have I Been Pwned has almost virtually all of them in it.
It said that the data contained almost 2.7 billion records, including 773 million unique email addresses. 2.7 billion. So if that came from only one source, like, I think we have a pretty good idea who that would be, right?
China.
I was going to say Facebook, but could be China.
All of China was hacked. I mean,
it was just China. Facebook isn't a bad guess. It's kind of hard to speculate just because it's very easy to concatenate all that breach data together because it just kind of floats out there. There's a service out there called Pastebin, which is a favorite for sort of just dumping data onto. Mm-hmm. So you can set up alerts there. So the LinkedIn data breach passwords kind of go through there semi-regularly. Yeah. So those show up on my alerts every once in a while.
Damn. That's so nasty. 7 billion.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's good to know. This is a good resource. HaveIBeenPwned.com. We'll definitely be putting that one in the notes for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's such a good website. I love the LinkedIn one. It's just so bad.
Yeah.
Kickstarter, Under Armour. Oh, my fitness pal.
I'm not a fitness pal, so I was not included in that hack. But.
Yeah, you're not a fitness pal of mine, that's for sure. I'm looking at my personal email address, like not my, I guess my secret email address, which is not very secret, because it's been pwned 10 times.
Oh.
Oh, man, I've been so pwned. Collection number one, exploit, Kickstarter, LinkedIn, Pemiblank. Nice. Obviously Tumblr, because I'm on Tumblr all the time. Mm. Oh, boy.
Oh, man. Looking at my old passwords. Buddy, here's some more. Well,
the thing I like about, I don't know if 1Password does this, but the thing I like about iCloud Keychain is that it gives you a little exclamation point on any password that's been used more than once for an account. So it's just like, it'll give you like a little like warning saying like, hey, this has been used on like 7 other accounts, you idiot. And then you have to go change it.
Yeah, I've been working on that for the past couple days. After we confirmed Sam for the show, I wanted to make sure that my 1Password was in a not totally embarrassing state. And I can't say that I've gotten it out of that state, but it is pretty, it's a lot better. I still have 64 reused passwords, but I think a lot of those accounts have not been logged into for about a decade and need to just be deleted.
Like 50% of my passwords are reused. That's terrible. Oh, yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, it's like terrible.
That's rough. It's been a fun exercise, though, going through all of these and either deleting the accounts or changing the passwords or changing the passwords and setting up two-factor. It's interesting. I found like a bunch of like emails that I totally forgot even existed. I don't even know what the purpose of them was. I sent one to you yesterday, Mike, where I had logged in. I had made the account at some point in what, like 2011?
Mm-hmm.
Never logged into it again until somehow I found it as a recovery email address on another old email. and then logged in and deleted it. So just a complete waste and a total security breach just sitting out there.
Yeah, but I will say it is important to monitor this yourself, because just as easily as I pointed you guys to it to look at it for yourself, your own data, the moment you know someone else's email, what's stopping you from searching their email on there? Mm.
Right. And seeing what site they've been hacked on, yeah.
Right, so this gives you a list.
And knowing which dump. Like,
yeah, what dump it is. How difficult is it to actually find the data from these breaches?
So some of it's harder. Like I just said a couple minutes ago, I know the LinkedIn data kind of cycles through Pastebin every couple of days. Yeah. I think I was getting, I had to actually cancel the alert because it was hitting me too often.
Is this new data every time or just like the same old data?
No, this is all from the 2016 breach.
Okay.
Yeah. Because these databases, just like how we talked earlier, you know, everything on the internet is permanent, right? So it hit the internet at some point. So it's out there. You just got to know where to look. There's sites out there that have turned these data sources into searchable indexes, right? So I'm willing to bet that, you know, for Jake, I've known you for years, so I could probably go and find a password for you right now. You know, just because of how long I've known you, I know a lot of your email addresses, and that's a home field advantage. Yeah, I can do it.
This is what they did on Reply All. They had like, Alex was just like, all right, I want you to find everything you can on me. And this dude like came up with a social security number, like the names of his kids.
Oh,
it was terrible.
Shit.
Oh, man. Once you invite someone in to start doing that stuff, it's crazy.
Come on in, Sam.
oh, my God.
So I won't go as far deep as they did on Reply All because I'm not going to go hop onto the dark web and troll the forums there. Because I don't want to pay for any of your data. Sorry, Jake. but I do have a couple sources that I can pull some known breach data. Like I do have access to the LinkedIn data breaches.
Oh boy.
So I do know from some checking your OPSEC at an earlier point in time. So a quick disclaimer: our email addresses. Should I read them out loud?
That's fine. I'll just beep it. I mean, I give you permission to read my email address. That's fine.
Okay. So you used to leverage the email address bit.com. I believe you used that when you were part of Under the Gun.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So just a real quick ancillary search on this. I think this one came up in 10 different data breaches based off of Have I Been Pwned, one of them being LinkedIn. So I go grab the LinkedIn data. I've got a hash for that.
Wait, what's a hash?
Great question.
The passcode, password?
So a hash is a one-way, I don't want to call it an encryption algorithm, but that's kind of the best way I can describe it at the moment. So standard encryption is being able to take something in plain text, run it through an algorithm, have something garbled on the other side that you cannot read and break. Mm-hmm. But two-way encryption is being able to use that same algorithm to decrypt it and read it in plain text again.
Okay.
Well, a hash is just a one-way version of that. So I take the plain text, I run it through this algorithm, and then I have this unique value. That unique value, if I run it through the hashing algorithm, is just going to give me another unique value. But the key here is every time I run that original plain text, it's going to be the same value on the other side. Hmm. We use this for data validation, and a lot of places use this for password storage. So instead of storing your password in plain text, what they'll do is they'll run it through a hashing algorithm, and if they're good, they run it through a hashing algorithm plus salting. And we could talk about that later. But essentially, they run it through this algorithm, and then in their database, it's just a bunch of random strings, right? So it shouldn't be anything that I can trace back to you. The unfortunate thing is a lot of places use hashing algorithms that are no longer considered secure. So MD5, it's a flavor of hashing that has been insecure for as long as I can remember, as long as I've been learning about this stuff. And it's pretty easy to create collisions and then kind of work backwards and break your way into the algorithm and understand what it is. Mm-hmm. So that's where, when these breaches happen, you go, oh, yay, my password was hashed. They only got password. Passwords weren't stored in plain text. That's not so good if you have a password that is common, because they already know the hash for, you know, password one. That's going to be the same every time. So I could just run through known passwords and quickly pick out the low-hanging fruit. So I've got a Hashcrack tool. This one's on the internet, actually, because you need some pretty high powerful, like either processing or GPUs to kind of get through a bunch of values really quickly. Mm-hmm. And so I run this through it and done. I've broken that hash and I've got, should I just read the password? How do you want to do this?
maybe don't read the password, but you can give me like the first like two or three characters and maybe the last one.
First character, second character, last digit.
Yeah. I can tell you the year that I made that password.
Oh my God.
Maybe you already have that info.
Well, because I know you, I could probably tell you what year you made that password too.
Oh yeah. Maybe.
And again, because I have some home field advantage, I know you, I know some of the stuff that you use. I know where to go looking for your information, but you know, I could turn around and do some of the similar stuff with someone I don't know by just starting with their name.
Wow.
And you kind of work through the system. You find an email address. You go, okay, I have an email address. What can I get from there? Oh, they're in a couple of breaches. Let's see if any of those passwords are there. And then I start logging into your stuff because most people don't change their passwords regularly. Most people don't go through and go, oh, hey, you know, new account. And I just use an easy password because I don't know how often I'm going to use this account. But you tie a credit card to it too, because maybe you have to buy something or you subscribe to it once or something like that. And I have access to your account. I have access to a payment method. You know, I know a couple of friends who could use that product too. Just start shipping that off to people.
Boy, that's pretty scary. I mean, I'll say I have stopped using that password and I haven't used it in a very long time. You know, like I said earlier, there are a lot of accounts out there that I'm sure I've completely forgotten about that still use that same password. And that's pretty scary.
Have we talked about what a password should be yet? I don't think we've touched on that, right?
Mm-mm.
Like what the most secure way is to make a password besides like this two-factor stuff. And like the, like, do we know, is it like random characters really long? Is it like, three random words, like
what's ideal?
See.
So there's a couple different camps on this, to be entirely honest with you. A lot of people follow the what we call the XKCD method. If you're not familiar with XKCD, that's a comic strip that comes out, I think, bi-weekly. And I want to say a couple years ago, they happened to come out with a real quick, down and dirty way to come up with a better password. And I believe their methodology was come up with three unrelated words, tie them together, mix in a couple of variables like numbers or symbols, and boom, you have something that you as a human, your brain can put together. Most other humans, their brains won't make those connections and computers won't make those connections. And to be fairly honest, that's not a bad method. It's not the best method because there's always you're always open to the chance for social engineering. You know, you can, depending on the length of the words you choose, there's always the option for not having a very long password and having guessable, because a 6-character password, even if you follow that method, is still a 6-character password, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some other schools of thought go the completely random route, and that's where things like password managers help. You know, with a password manager, you can have a string of 35 characters don't mean anything to you. And because of the randomness, it ups the entropy and it makes it a lot harder for running password crackers or guessing through dictionary attacks. You're lessening that opportunity for someone to spend a ton of time to figure out who you are. They're going to go around and look for lower hanging fruit, because I got a secret. Hackers are lazy. They want to know what data they can get to quickly and easily without a lot of effort. So if you make yourself that one person who's just a little, what's the added, the old idea of, is you don't have to be the fastest one in your group. You just have to be faster than the one, or faster than the slowest person in the group, when the bear comes around or something like that.
I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you just have to be better than someone down the street. So a 35 character random string is great for that. There's also, more often than not, now today, we can go and use spaces in passwords. That used to not be a thing. A lot of old password systems couldn't handle spaces. But now they can, and with that, you can actually write whole sentences. And that's actually a really easy way for you to remember. You're throwing in a lot of randomness. You can have upwards of 60 characters very easily and throw in special characters or, you know, make it a little bit leet speak or whatever you want to call it. And that's kind of the area I recommend. It's an easier way to remember. You just have to know what your sentence is, right?
Well, I think the argument here is that a good password doesn't have to be memorable if you have a password manager, right?
Right. Absolutely.
So it may as well just be whatever it is that has, like, you know, the most bits of entropy. You make it as complicated as you possibly can, maybe as long as you possibly can, given the website or the service that you're signing up for. Like, they have limits, and some of them may even strip blank spaces. So maybe a sentence thing won't work there anyway. So I don't know. I don't fall really squarely into any camp. I like the word ones because they're easier to type if I have to type it for some reason.
Yeah.
But I think, like, the longer and the more complicated it is, the better, because the computer doesn't really know words, and that's changing some. Machine learning and all that, things are getting scary very fast. But at least for right now, as long as you make it complex.
Yeah, quantum computing is going to completely ruin the concept of uncomputable passwords.
Yeah.
That's a whole different discussion. Side note, while we were sitting here, I ran an entropy test on that password of yours I found, Jake.
Mm-hmm.
Its strength is weak,
yeah.
And it has 34 bits of entropy.
Yeah.
Just 34. That barely gets it above very weak.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, don't use that password ever again.
No, I haven't. I definitely haven't. I'm using much, much better passwords now. Like, that wasn't even good at the time.
No, it wasn't.
And I'll tell you what, that password was based off of another password that I had learned from a friend who gave me their password to something else.
Oh,
so it's like, it's doubly bad. It's not good in its own right. And I just copied the idea of it from somebody else.
So for me, there was actually a password that I was using for a very long time that was a derivative of the school password that we were assigned back when we were first getting computer accounts for school. And it was some variation on your student ID and something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I played around with that one, came up with something kind of a variable on it, but that was my password for, I think, through most of college,
mm-hmm.
right? Because again, we come from an era where passwords were just passwords. You just threw something into a system and said, hey, there you go. This is me. That's it.
Yeah.
And password cracking didn't seem like that big of a threat.
Yeah, when you're logging into RuneScape, it's not much of a big deal.
Hey, those gold hackers, they stole a lot of time, man. But yeah, with banking being so prevalent on the internet now, social media, we put so much of our lives and livelihoods on the internet. Having a bad password is like keeping your front door unlocked in a bad neighborhood.
How often should you change your locks then?
Hmm.
Ooh, okay. So this is an open discussion within the security community right now. So the old belief was at least every 60 days, I believe, either every 60 or every 90 days. And that came from a standard that was written a long time ago from the National Institute for Security and Technology. I think that's what NIST stands for. Let me double check myself on that. National Institute of Standards and Technology, excuse me. So NIST is a government body that kind of dictates some technology standards and how often you should do things or how best to secure things or create controls around things. And passwords, just recently, within the last year, they've kind of gone 180, and the original author of the publication said, yeah, I was wrong. Don't change your passwords nearly that much. And the thought process behind that is, if you have people, so say you're running a company, okay? So Mike, you're the CTO, and you go in and say, hey, I need to set up my company password policy.
This company is screwed, I'm just saying right now. This is so screwed.
your company password policy says, oh, we're going to just follow the NIST standards, you know, 8 characters or more, use a special character, a capital letter, lowercase letter, and a number. And then change your password every 90 days. So once a quarter. Cool. We can set that up. We've got automation to do that for you guys. Boom. Well, standard user Jacob over here.
Hello.
Who's, you know, doesn't really like using computers in his day to day is just has to get access to his emails every morning, right? What's stopping him from setting his password? He starts in winter of 2019. His first password is winter 2019 ! That with a throw in a couple capital W there, and he meets your password standards perfectly. Well, hey, it's next quarter. It's springtime now. So spring 2019 ! And so on and so forth. Summer 2019.
Period.
Yeah, throw in a period maybe. Or hey, it's winter again. Time to change to 2020. Or we know a lot of people who do winter 1, or and then winter 2, winter 3, winter 4, winter 5. It's just password changing on a regular basis creates iterative passwords.
It does. I could tell you this from experience. Because it's so annoying. Like, it's something that you, it's when you're sitting down at your computer at work and you need to log in, generally you're like, you're there to do something and you want to get to it quickly before whatever it is runs out of your brain. So when you're typing in your password, you want to be muscle memory and it becomes muscle memory. So then when you have to change your password, you want to do as little to that muscle memory as you possibly can. So changing the 1 to a 2 or a 3, that's easy. That's changing yep. the direction of your pinky. Like it changes almost nothing for you, but it matches their requirements and keeps you up to the spec.
Absolutely. And you're following their rules exactly how they designed them. Mm-hmm. Star member of Mike's company there. Good job, Jake.
I'd like a raise.
Denied.
Okay. So we've established how to find out if you're screwed, what to do in that you can get a password manager. You can set up new passwords, new stronger passwords, set up two-factor authentication. I suppose my next question is, you can change the locks on the door, but when is it advisable to move or to foreclose the house? Like when should you erase old accounts?
I don't know if there's any consensus on that one. I think that's all down to personal preference or sort of perspective on things. I'm in the camp of if you're not using it, get rid of it. Because otherwise, it's just another avenue for someone to gather information about you or pretend to be you or something along those lines. So, you know, if it's an old email address you don't use, set up a forwarding address and change it to an impossible password or shutter it or, you know, if it's an account for something that you used once, like Ticketfly to buy tickets to go to that Dave Matthews Band concert in 2012.
You know, that's what it was.
Yeah, you know, if you did that, actually, I don't think Ticketfly existed in 2010. But point stands, you know, if you're doing something just once and setting up an account for it, because everything today asks for an account, if you're not going to use it again, just get rid of it. There's no point in having all of those windows open in your house if you don't need them there.
We started this conversation, though, with saying, like, the internet is forever, though, so can you ever truly get rid of it?
So let's rephrase that, then. So maybe not get rid of the accounts, but make them inaccessible. That's a better way to put it, then. Because you're right. It's not truly gone. It's still sitting in a database somewhere of, you know, former users or something like that. So when company X goes, hey, we need to do a user drive, let's reach out to people who had an account at one point, they still have your email address, right? But at the very least, you can protect yourself from these data breaches, right? So if it's an account that you set up 16 years ago for Neopets or MySpace or something like that, if you're not using it, what's the point in keeping it open? You're just making one less avenue of attack on you.
I think some of this is changing a little bit in our favor, right? Like GDPR has come around. So technically, in most cases, companies that are complying with GDPR, as they should, if you make a request to delete your data from their system, they should erase all of it. They shouldn't keep any record that you were even a former user. Is that
even possible, though?
So that's a great question, and a lot of people ask that. And the other side of that coin is, how do you validate it? How do I know that a company's actually gotten rid of it? Mm-hmm. Outside of forming a class action lawsuit to say, hey, you should hand over your data with a subpoena, I don't know if we'll ever really know. But that does bring up the conversation of the right to be forgotten. That's kind of a concept that's being thrown around of, you know, we as human beings should be able to go, hey, I want to be off the map. You know, it's my personal liberty to be my own sovereign citizen of my own devices. Granted, I still have to follow appropriate laws and yada, yada, yada. But I still should be able to go, hey, I don't want to be a part of this thing that is the internet anymore. Please forget me. Thank you. But there's the question of what is the technical ability there, right? To Mike's point, can you do that? Can you be forgotten? And I don't know, because I'm sure there's remnants of me on Facebook out there, even though I did the whole GDPR, pull all of your data and delete me. Thank you. But I'm sure you can go find something about me out there.
It's very hard to find anything about you. I was trying to find your job title for this, and I couldn't find it anywhere.
That's by design.
Hey, good OPSEC, man.
Yeah, good job. I thought I was pretty good at finding out things about people on the internet. I consider myself a pretty decent investigative journalist as far as the internet goes, but you've surprised me today with some very old passwords. It's kind of scary.
I got some resources for you, man, if you want them.
I would gladly accept them as long as they run a Macintosh.
Hey, the internet runs on anything. There's actually a whole field called open source information gathering. OSINT is what we refer to it as. It's actually one of my favorite forms of social engineering, is being able to go, I have this piece of data about someone. What else can I find? Can I figure out where they live? Yep. Can I figure out what bank they go to? Yeah, got that. You know, old passwords, old email addresses, and it's amazing. And that's just all about knowing where to pick up those breadcrumbs that we mentioned earlier. You just got to know where to look, and you will find Hansel and Gretel.
So I'd like to think that everything that we've talked about in this episode has been geared towards helping people protect themselves. I'm scared, however, that some of the stuff that we've been talking about might help somebody who has the wrong idea.
And one of our 50 listeners.
Well, this will be out in perpetuity. I mean, this mm-hmm. podcast also has the right to be forgotten, but who knows? So if somebody, you know, wanted to, they could basically do everything that you're saying that you've done to find out stuff about me. You know, they can find out my email address, which is not hard to do. It's listed on several public websites. They can use that to see what dumps I'm in. On Have I Been Pwned, which is also supposed to be a tool that's helping people, right? But gives you an indication of where to look for that information. And then mm-hmm. they can pull that information and they can, you know, they can use this open source software to do nasty things. Where is the line drawn? When does this seemingly innocuous research that you're doing, when does that actually step over the legal line?
So that's where ethics come into play. I've heard it put before. All of these skills are out there on the internet. Anyone can go learn them, but you got to stop and ask yourself, do you want to be Superman or do you want to go to jail? Mm. Right? Because one of two outcomes are there. I can sit here and be on this podcast and talk to you about all of these things that I can find. And I look like a Superman type person. Right.
And I also gave you permission to do it. I should be clear with that. I said, do it.
Yeah. That's where the ethical line comes of where the law starts, right? So if I went off and did this and not only just gathered the information, but used it to try and log into some of your accounts, then I start to cross the line into what is known as the CFAA or the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. Mm. That is, it's a very vaguely written law that is designed around, hey, we identified with Kevin Mitnick that we don't have a good way to put people in jail for accessing computers in a way that they shouldn't be accessing them, even though technically they're using them exactly how they're designed. They're just using them with loopholes in mind. That's where, you know, you got to figure out where your line is. For me, I'm here to try and help people by, I guess, ethical hacking is sort of the route I would recommend that of, you know, you don't know where your holes are in your defenses until you hack yourself. But the longer you take to sort of do that review on your own stuff, the more time you're giving someone else to do it in a negative tense. But yeah, the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act exists to protect you to a certain degree. At least gives you the right to prosecute if someone stomps on your rights there.
Well, good. Glad somebody is kind of vaguely looking out for me.
What's the ideal, though? Like, what's the ideal world for security? Just biometrics?
I don't think there is an ideal. I guess the hope is people start paying attention. The whole reason security is spun up into the monster that it is right now is because people don't pay attention. They don't pay attention to the breadcrumbs they leave. They don't pay attention to the doors they leave open. They don't pay attention to the stuff that they sign up for. And the kind of harsh reality of it is you're making yourself a target for the people who do pay attention. Because that's all that hacking is. It's the people who have that thirst to go and figure out how something works down at a granular level to find those loopholes, to find those little pieces that they can go, oh, hey, if I tug on this thread, the entire shirt falls apart. So I guess the ideal is make people educated. I wish there was a better means to say, hey, let's just turn off the internet and start fresh. But I don't think that's not in our future. So doing things like this, where we help educate people and say, hey, have you thought about this? Or please don't use the same password you used when you set up it in high school. You know, that's the education track that we kind of have to take to get us to the point where hopefully my job won't be needed at some point down the line.
Well, I've learned a lot.
I'm scared.
I know. It is scary. It is scary. It's just so fluid. That's the real scary thing. You know, like the password that I used in 2011, maybe not that great. But probably not the worst thing. At least it had, you know, a capital letter, lowercase letters, and some digits. But today, like it's awful. It's really bad when I look at it in one password and I compare it to the passwords that I'm generating now. Like it's a world of difference. And in another 5 or 6 years, the passwords that I'm using now might be really bad. And then when quantum computing is fully operational and online, that's a whole nother monster.
Yeah, it's okay. Then AI will happen and we're all ruined.
Yeah, that's the end game for us all is AI.
Unplug it.
See, just burn it down. Start fresh.
That's what's going to happen, dude. We're going to have a barter economy. It's going to be great.
So, Mike, who's the most bizarre person you've ever met?
I would say Ben Folds.
Wait, have you guys both met Ben Folds?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
I met him in Nashville, I think is where he lives.
Yeah.
He was/is friends with my old band leader, and so we bumped into him on the street. She was going to his house for dinner, but the rest of the band wasn't invited because we were just the band. And we had never met him, so it would have been weird to have like four people in the house also. And so after dinner, they went downtown, wherever the place he lived was, and just get an ice cream. And we just bumped into him in the street and we're like, oh, hey, how's it going? We're getting frozen yogurt too. And it was like really weird. We all just kind of stood in a corner, band looking at band leader and Ben Folds' family, like wife and kid there. And one of the band members was like, oh, we went to this place to eat, and like swung her arm around and hit Ben Folds' wife in the face with her arm. It was weird. It was a weird moment, but I thought it was funny.
Did you ask him to sign your knee?
No, I did not ask him to sign my knee.
That would have been really weird.
We said, sorry for punching your wife in the face. Have a good year.
That's probably a better recourse.
Yeah.
You know, when I went to Nashville in 2014, I went to this one place called the Frothy Monkey, and it's a really nice cafe. The food's really good. All the wait staff's really nice. But apparently it's a place where Ben Fold goes often just to like sit and work and write. And so I went for lunch every day for like 4 days straight, hoping that I'd run into the guy and just be able to say hello. Never got the chance.
You creep. Yeah, he knows. He caught on to that.
His OPSEC's
pretty
good.
Everyone's met Ben Folds except for Jacob.
It's so sad. Oh, well, what else is good in your world, Sam? I know that you're like a dad and you're back at work now, and that's probably been like everything, but what else have you been, what do you do when you do get free time?
I'm a nerd, so more security stuff when I have free time.
Change my passwords, you know?
Yeah. I watch other people change their passwords. No, I, you know, study up, try and keep on the edge. Try and, you know, right now a lot of it is spend time with the family. These are awesome moments to watch the kiddo grow and do cool things. And when we do get downtime to nap, we're usually rewatching Scrubs or something along those lines.
Yeah.
So nothing too exciting in the Fox household, but that's considering the job I deal with every day, it's probably for the best for my heart health.
Yeah. No kidding. Oh, well, I'm so happy for you guys. And I know that it's just going to get harder and harder as we all grow up. But, yeah, I'm going to miss the nights when like we're just able to get on the computer and like you and your wife play D&D with me and some of our other friends for upwards of 4 hours.
Once Elliot can start entertaining herself, I think we can get that started back up. That's my hope.
Okay. See, that's not where I thought that sentence was going, but I'm glad that you said that and not when Elliot is old enough to not eat dice, then she'll be playing as well.
That's the hope. We are going to train this kid to love board games and tabletop games as early as she can. But she needs to learn how to use her arms first. She's not very good at that yet.
Well, shoot, dude. Thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about all this. I knew you were the right guy to talk to. I feel validated in the steps that I've been taking over the past couple weeks, and I've learned a couple more things that I'm hoping I can work into my password changing flow. And I think more than anything, I just got to do this a little bit faster. I got to work through all this Watchtower stuff and make sure that all my stuff is good to go.
Yeah, it's a good practice. I'm proud of you for going after that on your own accord. I don't know what the genesis of your path forward was there, but I'm glad it got you to where you are. And yeah, anytime you guys have security questions, I am more than happy to give you my 2 cents, because I have plenty of cents to give.
I have a question, I guess, to go back on that really quick. What kind of things do you look for when you said like part of your job during your workday is to spot threats coming in? What do you keep an eye out for when you're trying to see like, oh, somebody's trying to get in, or like something weird is escaping or something like that? Like, do you, it's like repeated intrusions, like repeated password attempts or something like that?
Yeah, luckily, so I guess for us, luckily, we don't have a lot of internet presence for my corporation. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a ton of people knocking on the front door trying to get in, which I am so thankful for, because that would just eat up a lot of time. So for us, we have to be very concerned about data leaving. So we watch for baselines a lot. So anytime we stray from the baselines, or so non-standard access to sites that are, you know, hosted out of Brazil. Yeah, that might be weird. Or all of a sudden, 17 users go to the same website that was created within the last 20 minutes. Yeah, that's a bad sign. They all just got fished, I think. Mm. So that, you know, we're watching for deviations in normal. The hardest part is figuring out what normal is, though.
Right. How many breaches would you say that you've had to experience since you've been with this company? Like, how many like big things that need to be addressed very quickly?
So no breaches. And I say that with a careful statement, because back to the laws, when it comes around breach data, the moment you name something a breach is when laws start to get lawyers and the FBI start to get involved. Mm. So nothing that is at the level of a classified breach. We've had a number of incidents. We kind of run through stuff, little things daily, some bigger stuff, maybe if we're lucky once a month. Sometimes we get situations where I'm on the phone through most of the night and trying to figure out why, hey, a Russian IP address logged in somewhere. Why did that happen?
Oh,
so, you know, we've done stuff like that where myself and my colleagues are on a conference call for upwards of 12 hours straight. So, you know, that's part of the job, though. But yeah, so nope, I've not been involved in any breaches.
That's good to know.
I'm knocking on everything that resembles wood in my apartment.
Oh, man. Well, Mike, is there anything else? Do you have any other questions for Sam?
I have a non-security question.
Cool.
So the transition from just regular human to dad, parent, like, did you ever feel it sneaking up on you, or is it just like, whoa, I'm fully like an adult right now, you know, that kind of thing?
So there, the 9 months of lead up is a very sort of surreal experience. So being the dad, you know, I'm not experiencing the same thing that my wonderful wife went through. She didn't, you know, she got to feel the baby early. She got to, you know that she was with the baby day in and day out. So for me, it's like, it was just like a growing anticipation to meet this little thing that we've been growing for months and months. And then I guess the first time I laid eyes on her, the whole world flipped upside down, I guess is the best way to put that, because nothing prepares you for being a dad. You get filled with this weird love that you've never experienced before. At least I hope so. I did. but yeah, it's, I don't have a better way to describe it. We've created a little pound of flesh that I want to do everything in my power to protect and love and nurture and watch her grow.
That's amazing. Yeah. It just seems like such a distant future, but I imagine it looked like that at the onset of the 9 months.
Oh yeah.
Or yeah, even before that. And then suddenly it was just like all hitting you at once. And that you said, like, as soon as you saw the baby, it was just like, that was it.
Yeah. 100% worth it. As soon as, you know, the first time you hold them, because or the first time they grab onto your finger and their tiny little hand can barely reach around it. Oh, it's surreal. That's, and I mean, for us, it was even weirder because, you know, Jake was in my wedding 2 months before we announced that we were pregnant, or 3 months before we were announced. So life happens fast. I'll say it that way.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. I mean, it is crazy to me. Like, I remember where I was when you called to ask me to be in the wedding. And I remember where I was when you called to say that you guys were pregnant. And those two things didn't seem very far apart. And then you tell me that the baby is born. I'm like, how is it already that time? How is the baby here? It is just so fast.
You're telling me. I mean, hell, this time last year we were ramping up for my bachelor party.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So that's just the scale of how quickly my life has changed.
Right. You've had a big year.
No joke. Looking for an even bigger one next year.
Oh boy.
Wait, what is it? What the hell does that mean?
Nothing to announce. Okay. That came off weird. No, we're just excited to do more cool things as the Foxes.
Yeah. Well, that's great, man. Well, we won't keep you from your family any longer. We appreciate you taking the 2 hours out and explaining to us how both screwed we are and how actually prepared we are if we have the right tools. So we'll be putting links to all the things that we mentioned in the show notes, password managers and Have I Been Pwned and XKCD comics and all of those fancy things.
Thank you for being our first guest on this show.
Yeah, happy to do it.
Is there anything you want to plug? Like any links where people can find you or any projects?
You can find me on Twitter. I think that's really the only social media that I'm active on anymore. So at @Samuel_Fox_. I've got all of, I think, 100 followers. So, you know, add yourself as 102. but other than that, yeah, I'm not a super public person. But yeah, that's about it.
Cool.
Right on.
All right, man. Well, I guess that's it for this episode. This feels weird, doesn't it, Mike? Like, it feels different. Like, the intro and the outro it feels inherently different because we have somebody else on the show.
Right. It's not just like a conversation we're just flowing in and out of or just like dropping in on. This is like a we made plans tonight kind of thing.
Right. I have notes. Like, beyond a list of topics, I had questions, which is different. Well, I guess I have questions for you every week, but those are also different.
That's just my password, like, credentials. That's really it.
See, I'm just keeping Mike on his toes. I'm making sure that every time I ask him a question, there's a chance that I'm going to hit on something close to one of his passwords that's going to make him change it and keep himself just a little bit more secure.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, it's social engineering at its finest.
Exactly. By the person I most suspect.
See, whenever you text me, I do feel accused. Like, when you text me about the random monitor that appears at your house or the weird letters that you're getting in the mail, like, I always feel like you're accusing me. Like, you're very slyly testing to see if it's me.
I didn't accuse you. I straight up asked you if you got me and if you sent this monitor to me.
You did ask me about the monitor. But the more recent weird thing that happened to you, like, you just kind of brought it up. But you're framing it in such a way, it's like, okay, this and the monitor, are you messing with me?
I didn't make the connection between the monitor and that. I just sent it to you mostly because of Bill Gates messaging me personally a month prior regarding his vast sum of money that he wanted to bequeath to me.
I think he must be getting better, because I've seen his name and his foundation in the news recently, and I haven't seen an obituary, so I think he's doing okay.
Yeah, it's so weird that he's not just going to, what country was he for medical help? Damn.
You realize you just killed Bill Gates, right?
I hope not. I was very scared for his life when I got that email.
I don't know, man. You're not going to get that money if he's living, I don't think. I think that was a parting gift.
It's okay. I have a backup plan. That letter Aaron got is all I need to worry about this time. We're gonna secure that sum of money from whatever country it was, and I'm not going to have to work another day in my life.
Well, that's exciting. You'll have plenty of time to change your passwords.